welcome, Red Ice members. Thank you for joining us. It's good to have you with us as we are going to continue with hour two with Henry Macau. His website is henrymacau.com, and he is the author of Illuminati, The Cult That Hijacked the World. And during our first hour, we talked about the free speech conditions in Canada. We discussed Zionism and the elite satanic bankers. And there's a few things I'd like to focus in on here on the second hour with Henry. That being World War II history, World War in general. I'm going to ask him if he thinks that this is a conspiracy. I know that Henry wrote a little bit about the idea that world wars actually are orchestrated in order to actually propel the global agenda, as it were. I also want to ask Henry a little bit about the power and influence of the Rothschild dynasty. But before we talk about any of that, I'd like to ask you a little bit about Bohemian Grove, Henry. You wrote a piece on that that is available up on your website. And just, if you can, give us a little bit of your outline of what you think is going on here. We have these elite people hanging around in Red Grove Forest in California doing some interesting rituals, to say the least. What's your take on this, Henry?
Well, there's probably two elements to this. One is these people are somehow participating in satanic rituals. And what we have is the specter of most of the world's corporate and political and military leadership essentially betraying their trust, the trust given to them by the public, and joining the satanic cult. And every year for 2 weeks, they engage in these satanic rituals, which may very well include live human sacrifice. So this is just too bizarre to believe, but unfortunately, there's a lot of evidence pointing in this direction. I mean, it's just too bizarre to believe. The other element of this is that these people also engage in sexual excesses, which apparently are filmed, and it's basically used to keep them, to blackmail them, keep them in line. So I think those are the two things that go on at this Bohemian Grove.
Now, I want to ask you about the blackmail thing, because I recently on redicecreations.com, our website, linked up an article actually regarding Elliot Spitzer, and he had some interesting things to say about the Federal Reserve. He said pretty much that it's a Ponzi scheme and inside job, so to speak. He seems to have been going out on this issue now, but he was, of course, tried. He had some issues in regards to some phone sex issues or whatever it was, but it seems to me that he was doing something. He was trying to write about something. He was trying to blow the whistle on something, and they consequently put him out there, so to speak, and actually hanged him, so to speak, in the media. Do you know anything more about
hung
this?
Hung him out to dry is the expression in English.
That's right.
But yeah, no, all of these, like, I don't think Spitzer, see, the way this works is, it's sort of with a nod and a wink. So people are just pursuing success, acceptance, they want to be part of the in crowd. They want to be part of the elite, but they I don't know how many of them really understand what that entails, how evil the intent is. So the ones that do rise to the top pretty fast, the ones that are dedicated to evil, but a lot of people involved are probably innocent. Now, I don't think Spitzer, I don't know how, he's New York Jewish, but governor of New York. So he had to be, he was the attorney, district attorney for Manhattan. So he was connected, but I don't know if he really understood what he was connected to.
Yeah.
In any case, he, he did annoy the powers that be, and they decided to sideline him, and that's what they did. I'm glad to see him come back. I'm sorry that I'm sorry that he had to embarrass himself in this way. I really feel sorry for men who seem to be addicted to sex.
Yeah, and also, yeah, continue.
Well, you know, he had such, you know, I'm thinking of him, I'm thinking of that Governor Sanford, North Carolina. It seems that this is the way they keep politicians in line.
Exactly. That's what I was going to bring up, because this has to do with the blackmail issue and aspect. Again, it seems to, or could it even be that they have to do these certain things, and this can be taped, it can be video taped or what have you, and this is something that they might bring out later on if they go against the grain. They have something on these people, so to speak, so they try to keep them in check in some way by having this issue of blackmail hanging over the head. Do you think that that's the case with many of these people?
Definitely, and I think Barack Obama is a very good example. You know, he definitely is an imposter, but this birth issue, whether he's in fact a natural born American, it's a double edged sword, because it's one way to discredit him legitimately. You know, on the other hand, it's a way for his handlers to keep him in line.
Yeah,
and so his handlers are probably quite happy to have this birther issue. This birth issue hanging over him, just as his handlers are probably very happy to have Larry Sinclair talking about how he administered a blowjob to Barack Obama on two occasions.
Yes. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I do. But that's just my opinion. Obviously, I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But I think it's true, because I don't think anybody would take on, you know, would basically put himself out there, if you know, as a hoax. I mean, this is very dangerous what Sinclair's doing. But the fact is, Sinclair hasn't been knocked out, so it's just knocked off. So it suggests to me that he's being protected in some way, and it's because the minute Barack Obama has any idea of actually doing his job, you can bet Larry Sinclair will be on the front page of the New York Times.
Hmm. Why do you think they put it out in the media this early, so to speak? Oh, well, I guess he's not getting loads of media attention now anyway, a little bit here and there, but it's not, as you say, not all over the place. It might just be that they want to have some kind of record that Larry Sinclair have been talking about this for a while now. And as you say, if something happens in regards to Obama, this could be one possible way that they try to kind of bring him down or ruin his reputation, like they did with Bill Clinton, right?
Absolutely. The birth issue is very interesting to see how they handle it, because it did make the mainstream media, and just like the 9/11 issue, that made the mainstream issue with the mainstream media. It's as though they give it 3 or 4 days of exposure and then they bury it. It's almost like they let the steam off. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm watching how they handle this, because this Obama birth issue is very, potent. The fellow was registered in Indonesia as an Indonesian citizen.
Yeah.
He went to a college in California, getting grants for foreign students. There's no records of any of his activities at Columbia. I mean, this guy. And then, of course, you know the wonderful story by the fellow called Cox. I think his name's Cox. The first time I heard Barack's name, you're familiar with that, eh?
I'm not, actually. Tell us about it.
Oh, well, you have to Google this. First time I heard Barack's name. But a American engineer back in 1993 described a dinner party where one of the participants, who was part of the Communist Party, said, "You're going to have a black president, and this, you know, he's a communist, and his name is Barack." Mm. And she went into a lot of detail about how we're taking over, man. We already have your black president selected for you.
Hmm.
This was 1993. just Google first time I heard Barack's name. It Jeff Rance posted it, and it's on also an independent site. I think the fellow's name is Cox.
Okay, very interesting. I'm definitely going to check up on that. I found a link to it right away here, so I'm going to have that up on Red Eye so people can follow along that story for themselves. You know, there's so many things I want to talk about in regards to Obama, of course, but the birth issue, some had suggested that is primarily about actually trying to open up the Constitution in some way, either be it for to enable other foreigners to actually become president after Barack Obama, and the American people will kind of go along with it, so to speak, this time because they want to have Barack in there still, so they're going to allow it if they have some kind of vote about it. Other people say it's just to open up the Constitution in order to rewrite it in some way. I don't know if you have any more input or thoughts on that, Henry.
No, I doubt if they'll change the Constitution. And I think this is a very dangerous issue, but so is the Sinclair one. And I think they're both used to make sure Barack Obama just continues to read from the teleprompter.
Yeah. And, you know, in regards to his socialist background as well, he was mentored by someone called, I think it was Solinsky. Have you heard of that name, Solinsky?
It's Saul Alinsky.
Saul Alinsky, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, it's two words. Well, he was, Barack Obama, just like this Sotomayor lady, they're all part of a communist underground, and I hate to sound like a right winger, but it's just literally true.
Yeah, yeah.
Saul Alinsky was a communist organizer who wrote the book on community organizing, and that's of course what Barack Obama did. He was hired to be a community organizer, but essentially the agenda is to divide and conquer, because communism isn't ever about true reform. It's about power and using legitimate grievances to exploiting legitimate grievances in order to put their people in power. But it's never about real reform. You're familiar with Bella Dodd, I would imagine, eh?
I am not, actually, no.
Well, Bella Dodd, Google my site for Bella Dodd, or there's an article on my site called "Communism, Wall Street's Utopian Hoax."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And she was a member of a high-ranking member of the Communist Party in the United States for about 10 years, and she said there was never any research done on what they would actually do when they get into power, never any work done on how to actually improve the lot of the people. And when she asked about it, she was told, well, we're a revolutionary power party, we're not a reform party. And which, you know, essentially they said to her, like, we're all about power, we're not about uplifting the people.
Yeah. Do you think that the communists, you know, Party of America and so forth, that they were tied in with the Fabians from the British end at all?
Well, first of all, more importantly, they were run out of Moscow. That's the first important thing to know. All communist parties are run out of Moscow, ultimately, whatever the lower ranking members think. As for the Fabians, that's just another manifestation of the same phenomena. And the phenomenon is essentially the Rothschilds, the people who create our money out of thin air, want to use that advantage. They want to translate that advantage into not only a monopoly over our credit, but a monopoly over everything on this planet. And that's what we're experiencing. That's what the New World Order is. It's going to be a monopoly over power, a monopoly over thought, a monopoly over religious feeling. They want to control everything.
Yeah.
They're the ultimate control freaks. So when you look at people who are in power, they're essentially people who are working directly or indirectly for the Rothschilds. The Fabian society, communism, Zionism, they're all different manifestations of the very same thing. They have a different, you know, different storefront, but they're selling the same product.
That's a good analogy. And, you know, as far as I'm aware, the socialist agenda is all about to create a world government. I mean, their theme song, so to speak, their anthem is called the International, which means that they are much interested in actually creating a world empire. Isn't that right, Henry?
Absolutely. But this isn't about world brotherhood. That's just a vehicle for the Rothschilds to create the greatest empire in history, a world empire. And one thing that's important to understand is they were essentially behind the British Empire. So this world empire that we're experiencing is really just the British Empire repackaged. But there's nothing really British about it. It's always been essentially this banking cartel led by the Rothschilds, but including, many non-Jews, because anyone who wants to advance their interests is welcome.
And I mean, I would agree with you there, and I think that this the strive for this one world empire, as it were, comes up from the Roman Empire epoch and era. It seems to me that it has transformed throughout history and have different kind of incarnations. We have the Holy Roman Empire of the more Germanic version of this, so to speak, the Austro-Hungarian, nobility and so forth. And then, as you say, we move onward. They try to create the Anglo-American Empire, you know. And it seems to me at this point that we're kind of at this cusp now when they are trying to create a world empire. And, I mean, it's just not enough how many times you hear any kind of leader talk about every single time they're elected, be it Gordon Brown, who's recently got in, or Obama, whatever, they always use the same phrase, which is, of course, New World Order, right?
That's right. But it's important to, and I think it's becoming obvious to Americans and British people that their countries are being colonized just like the rest of the world. There's nothing particularly American or British about this world empire. It's really an empire of a financial elite, the shareholders of the central banks, and they're colonizing the whole world. And in fact, that's what they've always done. It's these same people are behind imperialism, period, in my view. That's the origin of imperialism, of every shade of imperialism. It's essentially, I'm not going to say 100% of imperialism, but the lion's share of imperialism is the greed of these Kabbalist bankers who justify their lives by wanting to suck all the wealth, all the nourishment out of the world, so that a great proportion of humanity starves. They're a cancer, and essentially, that's what we're dealing with. Mankind is infected by a cancer, both material and it's, of course, spiritual now. And that's what we're fighting.
And in one way, Henry, they've kind of reformed the world, so to speak, has definitely been through the world wars. I mean, more progress, so to speak, towards this world government has been taken after the world wars. As they say on an official level, because this will in the future prevent any other war. You know, that's what they said after the First World War, but that didn't help. We have the second one, you know. But what's your take on, if we talk more generally about world wars? I remember you wrote this article called Are World Wars Orchestrated? Tell us about this idea a little bit, Henry.
Well, it's in the Red Symphony, which you can Google online or Google my site for the Rothschilds Conduct Red Symphony, in which an insider says essentially war is revolutionary. It's they're very clever. They realize that the way to take over the world is not to say, hey, we're taking over the world. Of course, that would align everyone against them. The way they take over the world is that they essentially take over both sides of every issue, and they create a plethora of issues. So there's nothing but confusion and conflict and they run both sides, they finance both sides of every issue, and they influence the resolution of each issue so it advances their interests. So the writer of the Red Symphony, Christian Rakowski, he was interviewed. He was a member of the Communist International. He was a friend of Trotsky. He was president of the Ukraine. He was ambassador to France and Japan, the Russian ambassador. He knew what was going on. And he essentially said a few things. Very important document, the Red Symphony. One of the things he said was war is revolutionary. In other words, peace is counter-revolutionary. What is revolutionary? Anything that puts the Rothschilds in power. What else is revolutionary? Essentially, the Rothschilds are Luciferians. They're Satanists. Revolution, in spiritual terms, is overturning the rule of God and essentially putting these Satanists in charge. And by rule of God, I simply mean whatever natural design there is in the universe and on earth, whatever spiritual laws prevail, they are going to turn them on their head. And that's what the real meaning of revolution is. And it's frightening to think how fashionable the term revolution has become. When people don't realize what they've signed up for, that they are really working for the Rothschilds. They're really working for not the equality, but for the concentration of wealth in the hands of the richest people on earth. And they're really working for the betrayal of mankind, to Satan. That's just how serious this is. So that's Red Symphony.
Yeah. And Henry, think that many of these people are doing this kind of work on the, I guess we can say, grassroots level? They get involved in an issue, whatever it might be, free speech or whatever it might be, some kind of revolutionary, more of socialist type of agenda where I think at least that many of these people, they come from a perspective where they think that they're actually doing something good. You know, they want to contribute, they want to change things, they want to make the world a better place. But what you're saying is that their energy, their dedication, their time and their effort, so to speak, is being used actually to imprison them more against them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Most of the people on the grassroots level are actually sincere idealists. And it's a tragedy that millions and millions of sincere idealists have gone to their death or have wasted their energies by misplacing them. And it's just a tragedy. But it's the brilliance of this satanic force that they have harnessed to human idealism diverted it to their own cause. It's a tragedy all around. But on the grassroots level, these people are usually genuine. And it's only the brighter ones or the more cynical ones who figure out what's going on. They rise up and they are used to control the others.
Do you think that the Rothschild family is at the top of the pyramid, so to speak? Or do you think that, well, I guess in your terminology, you talk a lot about Lucifer or Satan, that that entity or deity might be at the top of the pyramid. But if we talk about it from the, first of all, we can talk about the supernatural natural level to this later on. But on a human level, do you think that the Rothschilds are the kind of ultimate bloodline family here to keep our eyes on? Or is there more people to... worth notice here?
I don't know if there are more people. I just don't know. Obviously, the Rockefellers are very important too. I think until further notice, I would say yes, the Rothschilds, but I would not discount the possibility that there are many other powerful families that just prefer to stay in the background.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, keep in the back and not even, these are potentially the people we never even get to see. I mean, the Rothschilds are very quiet. They're very kind of not engaged in the media a lot. They have been, few little outbursts, so to speak, here and there, where they comment on something or say something, and people know about them, which generally are involved in researching, you know, conspiracy and whatnot. But beyond that, they don't appear too much. But what you're saying, I guess, is that it could be several powerful families behind the scenes that we never even heard the names of, right?
Well, the Rothschilds represent a syndicate of Kabbalist Jewish and Kabbalist non-Jewish people. I'm not privy to who exactly runs the show, but there's a lot of names back there, as you know. Warburg is another big name.
Yeah,
they've been very important, and there's a whole list of bankers. You know, Kunloeb, Erlinger, Speier, it's Seligman. There's a long list, mostly Jewish names, unfortunately. But there's also names like Schroeder, Hambros. There's a lot. You know, I would say 50 families at least.
How about the royal families, Henry? The British royal family, the Windsors or the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, are they behind this or in on this in some way as well, do you think?
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't have any first-hand information, but, I mean, I have read reports that they're actually critically important. I don't believe that, but it's possible that they have a critically important role. I tend to take notice of that famous quote from, I think it was Nathaniel Rothschild, who says, I don't care which puppet sits on the throne of England, as long as I control the creation of money.
Yeah.
And so I think that was a giveaway. Essentially, kings are just straw men. They're highly remunerated, you know, for their role, but I don't think they actually exercise power.
What if we talk a little bit more about the world wars, Henry, and this idea again that they propel the global agenda by world wars. You know, you've been researching a lot on the Second World War. I know some fascinating information brought out some interesting material in regards to how the different sides seems to be working with each other at certain levels in order to actually, you know, bring forth the conflict of world war. Isn't that right?
Yeah. What they do is they essentially finance people who are doing on their own volition what they want them to do. And so people who are not following the agenda, like me and you, for example, we don't get any attention and we certainly don't get any money from any mainstream source, right?
That's correct.
Right. And so I think they... I'm not quite sure how much Hitler was compromised, but I take seriously where it says in the Protocols of Zion that there's never any real anti-Semitism unless we authorize it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my general view of the Nazi regime is that there's no way it could have come into power without the collaboration of the central banking cartel. I see the Nazi era as a huge hoax on the German people. It was essentially designed to do what it did, which is destroy Germany and destroy Germans as a potent force in the world.
Mm.
And they did it by putting in power this crazy genius who led them down the path to destruction. And now the real question, there's no question that Bormann was working for the Rothschilds.
Okay.
No question in my mind at all.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, did you see my recent article about the book JB, Operation James Bond?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember that.
Right. Well, there's plenty of evidence that Bormann did not die after the war, during the escape from Berlin, that he lived on. But according to this book, Operation JB, he was actually rescued by the MI6. in an elaborate operation. I invite your listener to go to my site and just search my site for Martin Bormann or Bormann ran Hitler for the Illuminati or OPJB or anything like that, or Michael Creighton, he wrote the book OPJB. Anyway, the excuse they gave for saving Martin Bormann was that he knew where the money was, but that's not the real reason. Bormann was working for the British, which essentially means the Rothschilds. And there's my previous article, in which an author, Martin Kilzer, says that Bormann was worth 50 divisions in terms of the information he bled to the Russians. And the Russians knew everything even before Hitler knew it. And so that's the article, Bormann ran Hitler for the Illuminati. So now, to what extent was Hitler conscious that he was really working for the Illuminati? I think there's a possibility that he was out and out traitor to his own cause. It's possible. There are suggestions that he did survive the war. The Russians tortured his pilot for years because they didn't, and the Russians are the one who supposedly found his body. But they tortured the pilot to make him say where he had taken Hitler. So the Russians obviously didn't believe Hitler was dead. Greg Hallett says he was taken to Spain, lived to roughly 55. It's hard to say, but it's quite possible that Hitler was in on it too. In other words, the whole Second World War was a horrible deception, a hoax on the German people and on the whole world. And when you look at all the mistakes Hitler made, you have to wonder whether he wasn't deliberately sabotaging the war, and certainly Bormann was, and Bormann was mistrusted and feared within the Nazi hierarchy. And after the war, Galen said Bormann was a Russian spy. A lot of people felt he was a spy. To be a Russian spy is to be a British spy. It's all Freemasonry and the Rothschilds.
As you say, Henry, considering what Hitler did, at least at the towards the end of the war, his kind of strange behavior, some of the decision he made, sending, just as Napoleon did, the army up into Russia over winter time, it just seems to be that they're working on some kind of blueprint on how they do this. What do you think?
Oh, there's so many mistakes. The biggest mistake was, how hard would it have been to promise the Ukrainians and the Russian people some kind of autonomy? I mean, the communism would have crumbled right away. But instead, they were more brutal than the communists.
Yeah.
I mean, does that make sense?
No.
You know what I'm saying?
No. Yeah.
And then he wouldn't let Paulus withdraw from Stalingrad when he had a chance.
Yeah, that's right.
Being encircled. There's just so many examples of mistakes that Hitler made, and it essentially overruled his generals. If he just let his generals take charge, they probably could have won the war.
But that didn't happen. It seems to be that the outcome or the fruits, some of the fruits at least from the Second World War, is, of course, the creation of Israel. That's something that came out of that whole conflict, which is kind of interesting if you look at it that way, considering what happened in the Holocaust and whatnot, and then you have the creation of Israel, and then you have to add on top of that, of course, which you mentioned a little bit, the potential flushing out, so to speak, of some of the German scientists through the paperclip program. But you also have the Vatican connection with the what they call the rat lines, where a lot of the Nazis seems to go to South America and kind of carry on what they were doing,
Well, the Nazis are a branch of the Illuminati, obviously. You just touched on a whole lot of points there, Henry.
Anything you want to touch upon or comment on?
Well, just, you know, I just picked up a book by accident the other day, and it was about the German attack on Crete in 1941, just before they attacked Russia. Mm-hmm. Did you know that they captured Crete? And did you know that they destroyed half of all the destroyers in the British Navy during that battle?
No, I didn't.
It was a huge victory for the Germans, for the Nazis. And then it wouldn't have been hard for them to go from Crete to Cyprus to Syria, and then to essentially attack, take over the oil of the Middle East, and pretty well starve England. What I'm trying to say is I believe that the Nazi war effort was sabotaged from within, probably from the level of Hitler, mm-hmm. certainly from the level of Bormann. And Bormann was responsible for the Holocaust, for the extermination programs, and which didn't kick in until after Stalingrad. And as you said, the Holocaust extermination of the Jews was essential for the creation of Israel. As a Jew, I was brought up, you know, with the obvious example that, us Jews, we definitely need a national homeland because look what they did to us, you
right,
know?
Right.
So, it was Bormann who did that. And who did Bormann work for? Rothschild. And who was building Israel, who paid for the Knesset and the Supreme Court and all the colonies for over 100 years? Rothschild.
Yeah.
So ultimately, in my view, the Holocaust, you know, the Holocaust, we could put at the feet of the Rothschilds. And I speak as someone who lost his grandparents in the Holocaust, lost my aunt, and my parents barely survived the Holocaust. So I blame Rothschilds equally.
How about
with the Nazis?
How about racism, so to speak, within the Jewish race? That there is, you have the question of Sephardic and the Ashkenazi and whatnot, and what seems to be happening there as well. Or I've heard theories about this that what they try to do was to kind of root out some of what they term like the lower bloodlines or whatever. In within the Jewish race, and they did it through the Holocaust and whatnot, in order to kind of I don't know what word we can use there, kind of refine or heighten the level of the genetic pool or whatever you want to term it. What's your take on that?
Well,
do you think that could be the case?
I don't. There is racism within Judaism, of course, people imagine that the Jews, the Jewish conspiracy, is a monolithic force. Just like with all other groups, it's the people who are in on this world order agenda, the satanic agenda, or the people who are collaborating unconsciously with it. And those are the in group, and the out group is the everyone who isn't. And with the Jews, there is a Sabbatean Jews, there are Kabbalist Jews, there are Zionist Jews. Those are all the people who are on the inside. Those are the people who didn't suffer so badly in the Holocaust. And then all the people who weren't part of this conspiracy, mostly Jews as well, they're the people that got exterminated. And so you follow me?
Yep, I do.
Yeah. So if we go back a little bit. Let me finish. I just picked up my train of thought.
Okay, sure.
So,
go ahead.
So Jews... Russian Jews hate Polish Jews. German Jews think they're better than Russian Jews. I mean, there's no monolithic Jewish face. It's really organized Judaism, which is organized and run by the Rothschilds and Zionism. That's the face of Judaism to the world. But any Jews that aren't part of organized Judaism, they're just like people of any other group, they're just innocents to be manipulated or ignored or exterminated, whatever.
Henry, if we just go back to the Rothschilds again and talk about the importance of of Israel that they seem to put on this particular region, this particular land. I want to ask you if you know why that is. Is this a religious question? Is it a kind of a theological idea that they have, that they want to be in this land? Or why do you think that it's so important to control this region?
Israel, in their vision, is going to be the capital of the world government. That doesn't mean that it's going to be Israeli or even Jewish. It's sort of going to be Masonic Jewish and Masonic non-Jewish, in other words, Illuminati. I've lived in Jerusalem, and there is a monumental quality to everything that's being built there, a quality that transcends a national capital. I have a sense of, that a world capital is being built there.
And this is in regards to the quality of the architecture, or what do you mean when you say that?
Well, yeah, the monumental quality of everything that's being built, like the Israeli Supreme Court is obviously going to be a world Supreme Court.
Hmm. Interesting.
And it's totally Masonic. You're familiar with the article by Jerry Golden, I'm sure.
I am, absolutely. Yeah. And is there more similar type of structures or buildings that are either in the plans or are there already that you're aware of?
Well, I haven't lived there for some time, but all the architecture has a, you know, of apartments and houses and buildings. It all has a monumental quality. There's more than a national capital happening there. And now they're invading East Jerusalem, and they're finding ways of basically getting rid of the Arabs. And it's a slow and inexorable process by which they, they will assert their domination. But but the Zionists are merely tools of the Rothschild world government. They're a convenient peg, a powerful weapon, to quote one of the bankers.
Mm. And
banker Lewis Marshall. You're familiar with that quote, eh? Lewis Marshall?
Don't know. Do you have it in mind?
Lewis Marshall. Google my site or search my site for Lewis Marshall. But essentially, Lewis Marshall was approached around 1918 by a prominent Jew to help us oppose Zionism. And Lewis Marshall was the counsel for Kun Loeb, so he was, he was well connected.
Right.
And he replied in a letter to the effect that Zionism is just a convenient peg upon which to hang a powerful weapon. So it's not about a Jewish national homeland. That's just a ruse. It's about the Jews creating a world empire for the Rothschilds.
Hmm. And do you think... What do you think will happen if I ask you, like, if you look ahead a little bit in the future years, do you think that they will succeed? Do you think something else will happen? Will God intervene, or will the human beings finally wake up and stop this? What do you think will happen?
Well, I'm not, I have to say, confess, I'm not really good at predicting the future.
Who is, right?
who is, right. And there, this is a 2,000 or 3,000 year plan that they're part of. I believe that it existed even at the time of Jesus, and I think the crucifixion of Jesus was a big part of this. So I feel that they're so powerful that I think they're unstoppable. But it's really the pace we're talking about. Our lifetimes are 60 to 100 years, but they could institute this in 50 to 100 years. You know, in other words, time is on their side. So I do feel it's inexorable. I think the only thing we've got going for us is the internet, and the fact that as conditions get worse, people will get will start to become dissatisfied, and I think we have to resist this with all our might, because what are we here for?
Yeah, indeed, what are we here for? And, you mentioned before that you view this as a as a form of a cancer in a way. And again, you mentioned the internet is a powerful tool in this process, informing people. But is there anything else you can say in regards to how we root out this cancer? How do we get rid of them? How do you think it's all about waking up more and more people, or is it just about what the people who are already woken up, what they are doing, or what do you think is the plan here? What should be done, so to speak?
I think this is a kind of cancer that can't stand light. So I think the more light we throw on it, the more people we wake up. It's largely a kind of control that's exercised through propaganda. It's really a kind of battle for the mind and the soul. So I really do think it's very significant that the true battle lines be defined and that we rally as many people as we can to our side, because even though we may always be a minority, we are, the ark, the vessel. We are the people who are carrying the heritage of Christian civilization, of civilization in general, into the future. So I think we simply have to fight every way we can, every legal way we can, take advantage of the trappings of democracy that are still left, go to our politicians and try to explain to them what is really happening. And nobody likes to know that he's really been deceived by satanic forces. And I'd like to think that people will pull back when they understand that.
Out of fear of that situation, they'd rather not know than know? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I haven't, I have faith that there are still people who have enough integrity to want to be on the side of the angels.
Yeah, absolutely. And in speaking about what we're doing and what we can do in regards to fighting and so forth, you are doing a little bit of your own fighting, not only with the writing, of course, but with the question of free speech in Canada. We talked about this, of course, last time you were on in the first hour, Henry, but just to recap quickly here before we begin to round things up here for this time, how is that process going, and are you going to keep people informed on your website about that, or have you heard anything new in regards to this? What's happening right now?
Well, they they're accusing me of inciting anti-Semitism, so I have to prepare my defense. At this point, we're demanding that they show, by quoting my work, how I am doing this, and inciting anti-Semitism, which of course is a lie. My real crime is to oppose Zionism and to oppose the central bankers.
Yeah.
The tribunal will probably take place in November, and I have to prepare my defense, but we're waiting for them to try to prove that I'm doing what they say I'm doing. It's a long, drawn-out process. I don't think anyone really has their heart in it because it's, it's so obviously bogus.
Mm. And are you, have you hooked up with a lawyer, or how does this work? Have you found a good person who can represent you, I guess, or what's happening there?
I have hooked up with a very good lawyer. Her name is Barbara, because I can't pronounce her last name. It's Ukrainian. No, it's Polish.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Kozlowski or something. Anyway, she did a constitutional challenge of the hate laws in Canada, an elaborate constitutional challenge. So she's intimately familiar with the Human Rights Commission, the tribunals. She's probably the best person I could have hired to help me with this.
That's excellent. Sounds very good. And I hope that it goes well, of course. But again, I guess people can follow along in more as we get closer to this on your website, henrymakow.com. Isn't that right?
That's right. MAKOW.
And, of course, I want to mention again that you're the author of Illuminati, The Cult That Hijacked the World. You can find more information about this book on Henry's website. But beyond this, I want to thank you very much for your time, Henry, for coming back for us here a second hour. And keep up the good work, and we'd love to have you back at some point, and definitely keep us posted in regards to what's happening here with the Human Rights Commission and all this stuff in Canada.
Okay, Hendrik, and you, and congratulations on your great work as well. I'm glad to be part of your website.
Thank you very much for joining us for our second hour with writer Henry Mackow. Go to some of the links that we've provided and read some of his material to further expand on these subjects. We are going to be back soon with Alfred Weber from Exopolitics, David Icke. We are talking with Sam Semir Osmanagic with an update on the Bosnian pyramids. We are going to have Freddy Silva with us soon, one of the most interesting crop circle researchers out there. We hope to talk with Catherine Austin Fitz soon as well. She was the Assistant Secretary of Housing and Federal Housing Commissioner at the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development in the first Bush administration. And she has some very interesting comments recently about both the economic situation, but also about the swine flu vaccination debacle that is unfolding right now. Also, we are trying to get in contact with Jane Burgemeister, the Austrian lady who has filed lawsuits against some of the major pharmaceutical companies around the world for performing mass genocide, pretty much. So we'll see what we can do there. But keep your eyes on redicecreations.com. My name's Henrik. Thank you very much for listening. Take good care, and we'll be back soon.